There had been a development in the treatment of ALS, an experimental drug that was just gaining passage. It was not a cure, but a delay, a slowing of the decay for perhaps a few months. Morey had heard about it, but he was too far gone. Besides, the medicine wouldn't be available for several months.
"Not for me," Morey said, dismissing it.
And all the time he was sick, Morey never held out hope that he would be cured. He was realistic to a fault. One time I asked if someone were to wave a magic wand and make him all better, would he become in time the man he had been before? He shook his head.
"No way I could go back. I'm a different self now. I'm different in my attitudes. I'm different appreciating my body, which I didn't do fully before. I'm different in terms of trying to grapple with the big questions, the ultimate questions, the ones that won't go away. That's the thing, you see. Once you get your fingers on the important questions, you can't turn away from them."
"And which are the important questions?" I asked.
"As I see it, they have to do with love, responsibility, spirituality, awareness. And if I were healthy today, those would still be my issues. They should have been all along."
I tried to imagine Morey healthy. I tried to imagine him pulling the covers from his body, stepping from that chair, the two of us going for a walk around the neighborhood the way we used to walk around campus. I suddenly realized it had been 16 years since I'd seen him standing up. 16 years? "What if you had one day perfectly healthy?" I asked Morey. "What would you do?"
24 hours?
24 hours, I said.
"Let's see. I'd get up in the morning, do my exercises, have a lovely breakfast of sweet rolls and tea, go for a swim, then have my friends come over for a nice lunch. I'd have them come one or two at a time so we could talk about their families and their issues and talk about how much we mean to each other. Then I'd like to go for a walk in a garden with some trees, watch the colors, watch the birds, take in the nature that I haven't seen now in so long. In the evening, we could all go together to a restaurant with some great pasta, maybe some duck. I love duck. And then we'd dance the rest of the night. I would dance with all the wonderful dance partners out there until I was exhausted. And then I'd go home and have a deep, wonderful sleep."
"That's it?" I said.
"That's it."
It was so simple, so average. I was actually a little disappointed. I figured he'd fly to Italy or have lunch with the president or romp on the seashore or try every exotic thing he could think of. After all these months lying there, unable to move a leg or a foot, how could he find perfection in such an average day? Then I realized this was the whole point. Before I left that day, Morey asked if he could bring up a topic.
"Your brother," he said.
I felt a shiver. I don't know how Morey knew this was on my mind. I'd been trying to call my brother in Spain for weeks and had learned from a friend of his that he was flying back and forth to a hospital in Amsterdam.
"Mitch," Morey said, "I know it hurts when you can't be with someone you love, but you need to be at peace with his desires. Maybe he doesn't want you interrupting your life. Maybe he can't deal with that burden. I tell everyone I know to carry on with the life they know. Don't ruin it because I am dying."
"But he's my brother," I said.
"I know. That's why it hurts."
I saw Peter in my mind when he was 8 years old, his curly blonde hair puffed into a sweaty ball atop his head. I saw us wrestling in the yard next to our house, the grass stains soaking through the knees of our jeans. I saw him singing songs in front of the mirror, holding a brush as a microphone. And I saw us squeezing into the attic where we hid together as children, testing our parents' will to find us for dinner. And then I saw him as the adult who had drifted away, thin and frail, his face bony from the chemotherapy treatments. "Morey," I said, "why doesn't he want to see me?" My old professor sighed.
"There is no formula to relationships. They have to be negotiated in loving ways, with room for both parties, what they want and what they need, what they can do and what their life is like. In business, people negotiate to win. They negotiate to get what they want. Maybe, Mitch, you're too used to that. Love is different. Love is when you are as concerned about someone else's situation as you are about your own. You've had these special times with your brother, and you no longer have what you had with him, and you want them back. You want them never to stop. But that's part of being human. Stop. Renew. Stop. Renew.
I looked at Maury. I saw all the deaths in the world. I felt helpless.
You'll find a way back to your brother, Maury said.
How do you know? I said. Maury smiled.
You found me, didn't you? I heard a nice little story the other day, Maury says.
He closes his eyes for a moment and I wait.
Okay, the story is about a little wave bobbing along in the ocean, having a grand old time. He's enjoying the wind and the fresh air until he notices the other waves in front of him crashing against the shore. My God, this is terrible, the wave says. Look what's going to happen to me. Then along comes another wave. It sees the first wave looking grim and it says, why do you look so sad? The first wave says, you don't understand. We're all going to crash. All of us waves are going to be nothing. Isn't it terrible? The second wave says, no, you don't understand. You're not a wave. You're part of the ocean.
I smile at the story and Maury closes his eyes again.
Part of the ocean, he says. Part of the ocean.
I watch him breathe in and out, in and out.